From Dumbledore Studios at Manassas National Battlefield Park, I'm Nikki Bland, and this is A Different Truth. A Different Truth can be found on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. Please give us a rating and a review if you like what you hear and help us reach a broader audience. We're also on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram if you'd like to engage with us there. Thanks for listening. In this episode, we talked to Prince William County School Board member Lisa Zargaper of the Coles District. She talks about education in general and the issues we're tackling throughout the county. Her experience as a teacher in Fairfax County and as a lifelong Virginian have equipped her to address the challenges we're facing locally and regionally. Let's get into it. So we are here for episode 11 of season 3. We are talking to school board member Lisa Zargaper. And fun fact, Lisa and I bumped into each other a few years ago at a mutual friend's Christmas party, and we were like, weren't we in band together? So we've actually known each other for a long time, but as life is wont to do, paths diverged and they've come back together. So some of our prior guests were like, you have to talk to Lisa.
Oh, very cool.
Yes. So welcome.
Well, thank you for having me.
Absolutely. I'm so excited. So there's more to tell than that you and I were in band together. So tell us a little bit about yourself, whatever you feel like sharing, personal, professional. Introduce yourself to our listeners.
Well, I'm born and raised in this area. My parents moved when I was 2, so I can just say I was born and raised here. I went through Prince William County schools. I went to Coles Elementary, Parkside Middle, and Osborne Park High School when we had no walls and no windows.
Yep. I remember it well.
Yes, you could take 3 classes at once or not pay attention to any of them at all. It didn't matter. So I graduated college in 1988, high school in 1988, and went to Arizona State for a couple of years. Did not like it. Not a party girl, and it's a party school. So I came back here and went to George Mason, and I got my bachelor's degree in music. And then I got a master's degree in flute performance.
Nice. I didn't know that.
Did the gigs and everything.
Wow.
Used to teach private flute lessons, worked in private schools. I used to work for band directors in the public schools. I would do their marching bands and things like that. I substituted back in that time, and then when I got married, met my husband when Potomac Mills was built. I met him there. So romantic. My husband is originally from Afghanistan, so we had this interesting relationship because Afghanistan, it was not something that I grew up knowing about.
Right.
So you remember how this county was when we first, when we were growing up. It was very homogenous. Fairly homogenous, which is not what it looks like today.
Yeah.
So I met my husband. We eventually got married. I have 3 daughters. And I did the stay-at-home mom gig for a while. And when my youngest was getting a little bit older, I decided to go back and get a master's in education. So I became a teacher, got my first job in Fairfax County, and I've been there ever since. And then just because I've seen some things, I was a little bit more of an activist. I decided to run for school board and got into that position and have been there since 2020. And then the pandemic hit. So, yeah, that was fun.
We'll talk about that. So you teach in Fairfax County.
Yes.
And you live and serve on the school board in Prince William County.
Yes.
Got it. I don't know why I didn't know that. I feel like thought you taught here too. Would that be a conflict?
It would be a conflict. Okay. I have substituted in our school system up until I got my job in Fairfax. And then I used to do long-term subbing. I mostly subbed for music teachers because there's not a lot of people who can do that.
Yeah.
But I also subbed in classrooms, academic classrooms. I would do special ed. I, you know, it didn't matter. I thought the experience was good. And when I got my job, I ended up finding it in Fairfax County. They just happened to have more positions open that year. At that time, when I was looking for a job, there were about 7 to 10 applicants for every position. And today it is not the same. It is more like 7 to 10 positions for every applicant. So we have a very serious problem with the teacher pipeline. So not as many people are graduating from colleges of education. Not as many people are going back and getting certification, teacher certification. And a lot of people are now leaving the teaching profession for a number of things, reasons.
So before we get into all that and more, tell me about being a music teacher. Ooh. Like, I loved being in band. So what do you teach? What ages? All of that.
So I wanted to be a band director, but when my kids were little, being a high school band director, it requires a lot of extra time. Your weekends, your evenings, and your summers are pretty much taken up with the band kids. And with my kids being so little, I didn't want to dedicate my time to that at that time. And I thought, well, maybe I'll be a middle school band director. And when I was doing those long-term subbing positions, I fell into a long-term elementary job and didn't know the magic that that place could hold. Wow. So I fell in love with elementary music. I eventually got a certification called ORF Schulwerk. It's an approach to teaching music. And it really helps develop a kid's creativity. I've since learned many, many other things about how to teach music. But elementary is magical because there's so many ages and stages. People will ask me what my favorite is. And there's something to love about every age.
Yeah.
Kindergartners are just so much fun to work with. They're I don't want to say they're fearless, but they're willing to try almost anything.
Right.
They'll play little games with you. Now in Fairfax County, in our elementary schools, we have sixth grade. So I have my oldest kids are sixth graders. So I see my kids for 7 years.
Wow.
And it's, yeah, it's a long time. Mm-hmm. And it's really amazing to watch them grow into these from these little people.
Yeah.
Into these interesting preteens.
Mm-hmm.
And then they leave you, and then they don't tell you where they went and what they're doing. And when you finally see them, they look completely different.
Right. So. Yeah. My mom taught for, 25 plus years at George Mason, or at the college level, most recently at George Mason, just retired. And I cannot tell you how many holidays were crashed by students that just loved my mom.
What did she teach?
English.
Oh, wow.
At George Mason, at Nova. Did she teach? I think she taught for a little bit at Mary Washington, too. So she got her undergrad at Mary Washington. She went back to school after, but to finish her college degree. So she got her undergrad from Mary Washington. And then my older sister and I was on, the seven-year plan. we got our undergrads and my mom got her master's all on the same day. From George Mason.
Oh, wow.
So it was in the paper and super cute. I just found the article the other day, in fact. But long George Mason family lineage there.
Wow. So my oldest daughter went to George Mason.
Mm-hmm.
She did her first couple of years at Nova, which I recommend to a lot of people. Do it.
So we all did.
Save tons and tons of money.
Absolutely. So Nova's such a good school.
And some of the professors are at other places as well. So you're getting...
You're getting four-year college professors for a tenth of the price.
Correct. And my daughter, my oldest especially, was really smart about she considered looking for scholarships as a part-time job. So she would always apply to those little $50 here, $150 there, $700 here. So she was able to take some really interesting opportunities and travel overseas and do some study abroad. Yeah. So that worked really well. My middle daughter started at Nova. And Yasmin is, she was my kid who, when she was in Prince William County School, she knew everybody at every school. She started the Muslim Student Association, I believe she started it, at Osborne Park, and just knew every kid in every Muslim association across
the
county.
That's great.
And when she went to Nova, she kind of kept that tradition, and she was very civic-minded, and she did some really great things while she was there. And then she went to GW. And the pandemic hit, so she did GW from her bedroom.
Yeah.
So it was a completely different experience. She'll tell you that Nova's the best school ever.
Right.
So,
wow.
And my youngest is not decided quite what she wants to do just yet, but I think she'll probably start at Nova as well.
Yeah. I did the same thing. My daughter just got her 2-year from Nova. She's taking a break to save some money. She wants to move to Richmond, go to VCU, blah, blah, blah. Can't recommend it enough.
It's hard for kids these days and parents because college is so expensive. I don't think that people think about, you know, when your kids are little, they always say, oh, save for their college. But I don't even know how people do it these days. I have a grandson now. And my daughter was like, I'm going to start him a college fund because it's so important. But, you know, I'm looking at what it costs now to go. And I can't imagine what it's going to be like in the future unless we do something about it. But it's not your only path. It's one of the things that I love. So about sitting on the school board. Now I can kind of loop that in.
Your perfect. Perfect segue.
Planned that. With the rising cost of education, one of the things that Prince William has been really good about offering are the CTE courses. Last night I was at Hilton High School. They were doing their automotive dinner, awards dinner. So that particular teacher is, he's a very unique individual. He builds really good relationships with his kids. His program thrives because he is an excellent teacher. He puts these kids in positions where they are in competitions. They get ASCE certifications. They're ready for work often before they leave high school.
Yeah.
And last night at the dinner, he just said, is anyone from, I can't remember what his first year he taught, but from his first year, and there were people lined up the back of the room we were in.
Like former students.
And some of these people run companies, they own businesses, they've been in the military, they not all of them go into mechanics. Like they're not always doing automotive, they're doing other things, but they have the habits of mind and the skills.
Yes.
Which is what we've been talking about in Prince William County Schools.
So I've seen that online where schools will have signing ceremonies for kids that are getting hired. Because they do get these skills in high school and they can immediately go into the workforce. And these companies are there and offering them employment contracts. And do we do that in Prince William County?
Yeah, we do. And we're doing more with internships and trying to engage our kids in high school with the companies that are in the area. I'm trying to think. What's the one in Manassas?
The one what?
The one.
The company? Micron?
Micron.
Yes.
I love their logo. It looks like a fun place to work. Micron's been a partner with Prince William County Schools. I'm pretty sure Amazon and so many places can offer paid internships and things like that, which is really, really nice for our kids.
Yeah.
And I know one of my nephews went through, he went to Patriot High School and he did the, he did a program there that kind of gave him sort of a step up into seems like a little internship, and then it's turned into a real job.
Yeah.
So these are really great for our kids to get real work, real life experience. We have dual enrollment, which
I was going to bring that up next because Ellie did that.
Yeah.
What did she take? So she was, I think at the time focused on English. We kind of were like a little bit late to figuring out that some of the classes she took could have been dual enrollment, but she didn't sign up. So she ended up graduating, though, with a semester of college done. So when she did start at Nova that fall, you know, she was a second semester freshman, first year, whatever you call it at Nova. And she's changed her mind a little bit. She wants to go to law school. But we've always been a family that, you know, same, born and raised here. And I'm like, don't even come to me with an out-of-state request. Not happening. We are very fortunate to live in a state that has so many amazing schools. And Nova, at least at one point, I can't imagine they aren't still like the number one community college in the country.
Yeah, it's so I didn't realize my Northern Virginia bias until I went to a... I'm in the Fairfax Education Association, which is VEA, NEA, and I went to one of their things where all of us across the state had gotten together, and there was a teacher speaking, and I don't remember where he was from, but what I do remember is how he talked. He was a teacher who had been in for over 25 years with a master's degree and still was only making about $50,000 where he is from, and he talked about how he had a student who wanted to become a teacher. They don't have a community college in their area. The nearest college of any sort is a two-mile 2 hours away, 2 hour drive. And it was a university, so you would have to live and stay there. And it was more expensive.
And pay university prices.
Right, more expensive than community college. And that was like when I realized my Northern Virginia bias. I'm like, oh, wow, we have it really good up here.
Yeah, we really don't
realize it. So there's a lot of great things in this area to leverage. We also have not only the dual enrollment, but we have all those AP classes where if you test well enough with a high enough score, you can maybe get some college credit.
Right.
Although I will say in my oldest daughter, who had had some pretty decent AP scores, it didn't give her college credit. What it did was it sort of said, yeah, we'll give you credit for that, but you still have to take something in its place.
Okay.
So it didn't save us money in the long run,
but
it saved her credit.
It's a business.
Exactly. So so we have that. We have the IB program, which is the International Baccalaureate program. That's over at Unity Reed and over at Garfield. Those programs are really, they prepare you very well for whatever you want to do in college. There's a Cambridge program. We have that at a couple of high schools, but in middle school, we have it at Parkside, which is one of my schools. And my next board brief is my next. It's my first board brief. It's my only board brief. It talks a little bit about the Cambridge program at Parkside. So there's a lot of opportunities for our kids. And that's one of the things that, you know, we didn't have as many when we were growing up. I like to tell kids, they're like, I'm taking six AP classes. I'm like, I think we only had six available our entire high school career. So
exactly.
Yeah.
Well, and I know we're talking about Prince William County Public Schools, but I know Nova has the AFCOM program. AFCOM, is that what it's called? Where you can take... get like data center certifications and, you know, have these internships and immediately come out. There is one that's a 1 year certification and the hiring salary is $56,000 a year at 19 years old.
Wow.
Like, first of all, sadly, that's probably not even enough to support yourself in
Northern
Virginia. No. But hey, if you and a roommate had that, you'd be living pretty well.
Yeah.
For a 19 year old kid, you know.
Right.
So even that, I think, and I don't know if we credit, who's the guy, the dirty jobs guy?
Mike Rowe.
I'm always like, he's the hero of not going to college. But just pointing out that college isn't for everybody. There's a ton of great careers. If everybody goes to college, who is going to be our plumbers and electricians? And
which that's another thing.
Yes.
Because the trades make a ton of money, too.
Yes.
These kids can come out of... So we have those CTE programs, some of them. But they can also, if you didn't choose that when you're in high school, locally we have electricians and plumbers. They have these schools and these classes available. And what they'll do is if they, you have to apply. There's a window of time where you have to apply. But you get into the program and they pay you to learn and intern.
Yeah.
And then when you finally get all your certifications in a couple of years, you've already made money.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just,
and you're not walking out with debt, and now you're immediately employable. You're already have been employed.
Yep.
But like I look at our middle daughter, we've known since she was little that college was not for her. I mean, she used to say she was started maybe 10 or 12 years old. She had a friend whose dad owned a couple of 7-Elevens. And so he, you know, in her mind, and maybe he was, I have no idea who these people were, but she was like, he's totally rich and I'm going to own a 7-Eleven and I'm not going to college. So she hasn't gone to college and she just started a job that she absolutely loves after bouncing around a little bit since graduating high school last year. But even at her age, she'll be 19 next month. And the jobs that she's had that she loves, they mean something. Like, they're meaningful to her. Like working on a nonprofit farm or volunteering at a nonprofit. And now she's working at Habitat for Humanity. Like, she wants something that she feels like she's accomplishing something.
Yeah.
Not just earning a paycheck. And, you know, she's not unique in that, I feel like. In fact, I just had this conversation a couple of times in the last few months. But today I interviewed an intern who's going to be working with us this summer at my company. And, you know, this younger, you know, younger millennials and Gen Z, they ask more than any other generation, what are the things your company cares about?
Oh, wow.
You know, in fact, I brought that up to our CEO a couple of weeks ago, and he was kind of like, oh, that's interesting. And he kind of like blew it off a little bit. He didn't like poo-poo it, but he was just like, oh, really? I hadn't thought of that. And like, next question. And one of the recruiters got on, you know, unmuted. There's like 75 of us on the Zoom call. And she said, actually, I just did a career fair at George Mason. And more than half of the people came up to our table, asked me about what are the things this company is investing in. Where do they put their money? Where do they serve the community? They weren't asking about what jobs were available or how much they paid. So
that is interesting.
I feel like that's a whole thing that we, the older generations who are hiring these kids and young adults, need to be aware of. Like, do we stand for something that means something to them? It's just very, it's very unique. Just so separate and apart from, you know, you see all the jokes about Gen X and they're all true, you know?
Yeah.
So I just find that fascinating. And so I can't, you know, the Gen X in me wants to be like, just go get a job and make a ton of money, or go get a good education and get a good job. And I'm like, but she wants to do something she cares about.
But we were raised, you and I grew up in that time period where it was like, you're a girl, you can do anything. And we went out and tried to do all the things.
Yeah.
And I think there's a pendulum, and maybe maybe our Z's are looking at us going, I'm not doing that.
Yeah, I'm not going to go kill myself and, you know, to get to that place. Like,
yeah,
they're super proud of me and like where I am in my career and, you know, the roles I have as a leader and stuff like that. But that doesn't mean that's what they want to do. And that's totally okay.
Well, my middle daughter, the one who was less than enthralled about doing college in a pandemic, can totally relate. She is very, so she and my older daughter and my husband started that one community services. So my husband, being Afghan, understood the plight of people trying to come here because he has walked that path himself. But there were so many Afghans who came all at once.
Right.
And there was a big big response to that. To that need by other Afghans who were already here. So my husband and my two daughters were very involved in that. They did a lot of volunteering and organizing. And you and I talked earlier about the housing being very expensive, and just even temporary housing, finding places for people to come.
Yep.
And they might be separated from their families. There was a lot of unknown things going on too. So they were involved in that. And my middle daughter is the one who talks about how she's kind of like, I can work wherever, do whatever. I'm always like, do you want to get a master's? She's like, I'm kind of happy doing this. So it's meaningful to her.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. We could take a page out of their playbooks, I think, some days.
I think so.
Yeah. Okay. So tell me about how you got into the school board and when and what drew you to that.
So now it's funny because I'm sitting on the school board and I'm going to talk about my activist life. And I don't believe you can hold that activist role as a member of the government in certain ways. So with FEA, we used to get involved with a lot of the, you know, local government things, because that's what affected our jobs, whether we were being funded enough, whether we were getting a step increase or a COLA or whatever. It's always the same thing, right? It's just different year, same thing. But that's where I started. So I would work with FEA to do whatever it was we were doing. Was it showing up to a school board meeting or going to talk to Board of County Supervisor, or was it talking at the state level? But I was doing that under the VEA FEA umbrella. And I also saw things in my own school that I was working in that just didn't make sense. So one of those things was we were a failing school. And the state was putting measures in place to make us a not failing school. And one of those things was getting grant money to support positions that were going to help support our kids. And after 2 years, test scores went up. Things were great. And then they took the grants away. And I thought that was the dumbest thing ever. Like, that was what we needed, though. We needed all those positions. And we needed those people who were doing the work. And we were helping kids. And the conditions that the kids were coming in, because this particular community had some kids that had been through trauma. Mm-hmm. That trauma doesn't go away just because you funded their education. Yeah. It's still going to come in the door. And every teacher will tell you, we just have to deal with, you know, you have the kids you have, whatever they come with. If they're hungry, if they're tired, if they know English, if they know English in 10 other languages, if they, you know, if they're, you know, parents are divorced or whatever the case may be, you have whoever you have. And government doesn't respond very quickly to those things. So I got involved on that level. And then I kept thinking, well, I want to run for school board because maybe I can make a difference in that. So you got to be careful what you wish for. also, you got to know whether that's where the change happens. Yeah. So I ran for school board. I had a three-way race and I happened to win. So I've been able to sit on this board. We were elected in 2019, but we started in 2020. So, and then the pandemic hit shortly after that. In my time, I've understood school board is basically three things. School board members are responsible for hiring, firing, and evaluation of the superintendent. So our superintendent is our only employee. The second thing is that we oversee budget. So we're involved in the budget process, but there's eight of us on the board. So we have to work together. There's no wheeling and dealing and trading. We have to do what's good for all of the kids. It would be
eight of you representing.
So there's seven different magisterial districts and then one at-large position.
Okay.
And no one has more say than anyone else.
Okay.
We all have a vote. And the third thing that we do is anything that has to do with policy. But policy has to align with the state and federal guidelines and laws that already exist. So that's the job. And a lot, I think a lot of people think there's, you know, we don't hire and fire principals. We don't, we don't suddenly get a new bus route. We don't plan school days and things like that. We don't choose curriculum.
I was going to ask about that.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people think.
So, yeah, the curriculum thing comes, it comes from the state, though. There's a lot of things that happen at the VDOE. And I try to be pretty good about posting when there's an evaluation of a program or a new idea. Or every 7 years, we, you know, you probably have heard the little thing about the history standards. Yeah, every 7 years, the SOLs in different content areas are reviewed. And it's public. It's completely public. You have a say. I tell students they have a say. You just need to email the thing. Nobody's going to say, well, are you 18 or over? You can say something. And then you get to also review, like, minutes of meetings and videos of meetings if you want to. It's all out there. It's all there for the public. But VDOE makes certain kinds of decisions. And then the divisions have to, their instructional services are the ones that kind of take in all this stuff and then filter it back out. So you're in your classrooms, your teachers are going to have guidelines that they have to follow. They are going to have textbooks that have been adopted on a local level. So every time there's a textbook adoption, we're going to put that information out. So none of this is hidden from the public, but you also have to kind of know when to look for it. I'm not sure if you don't have kids in the school system, you probably aren't going to know about it as much. But
I mean, I feel like if you do have kids in the school system, like I admittedly just had kids that made great grades. So I was just like, keep doing what you're doing. Like,
I know,
you know, I'd say all the time, like, I had no idea what Ellie took, you know, because she just was such a good student and she talked to her counselor and she, you know, once she was old enough to do so, like, picked her classes. And I'm just like, yay, you're a great student. Like,
well, and that's the thing is, I think because of the pandemic, we've had a lot of, I don't know if you noticed, there's some contentiousness that's been going on.
Just a little.
And, you know, parents have always been a really important part of their kids' education. But we also realize that there's parents who got to work. Parents who have, you know, this is how I did it when I was a kid. Why aren't we doing it the same way? I admit I'm like that myself. I'm like, I remember trying to help math homework and I'm like, I failed my daughter's math homework because I didn't follow the directions. I was like, oh, that's not how we would have done it.
Right.
But, you know, so things, some things change.
Yeah.
You have parents who maybe didn't experience this particular school division or this kind of system. And so they don't necessarily know all the questions to ask, which is why we have included in our budget moving forward, having a parent liaison at every school. Now, each school is going to have, they're going to have a slightly different function. I've had people say, well, aren't they translators? Well, maybe they can translate, but if I don't know anyone who can translate all the languages.
Yeah.
So we have that separately. But our parent liaisons exist so that if parents need information or support, that's a great place to go ask.
Mm-hmm.
So
they're start with that person.
You can start with that person. Yeah. They and if they can't help you, they're going to help you find out. So they're a great connection between classroom and family. Mm-hmm. So that's something that's different from when we were in school.
Yeah. Do you find that a lot? You know, because that is a lot. I mean, it's almost like. There's so much information out there. Mm-hmm. People probably don't know everything that's available to them. It's a lot for somebody to spend some time sitting down at their computer and finding all that information. So do you feel like you get parents who think something may be happening because of perhaps a story in the news, whether it's about Virginia or not, and then they're like, oh my gosh, are we doing this? And you're like, hold on. You know,
yeah, it does happen a lot. And sometimes I'll have to ask a person, I'm like, where did you see that? Is that in one of our schools or are you just worried about it?
Right.
And then, you know, but when you're worried about something, that's legit.
Absolutely.
Right? So you do.
And I'm not saying, you know, like people are lazy. Just go Google it.
No, of course not.
You know, it's a lot.
Well, one of the most frustrating things right now. Is trying to figure out where all of the policy stuff is, because the way we search for the policies in board docs is not. It's not like a Google search engine. Mm. And it is very frustrating when people are like, where's that policy on blah, 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 blah. And you're, you know, trying to get them to direct them there. So that's an industry improvement that should be made because it is very frustrating.
Well, I know I work in contracts. We live and die by policies and procedures and the FAR and all this stuff. And I'm like, you know, Google is my friend.
Right.
Well, it's overwhelming.
So that's another thing that I'm not sure if people, I know I didn't completely understand it until I got this job. The board approves policy and we do have a hand in writing and amending some of it.
Mm-hmm.
But we also have legal that has to make sure that we're not doing something funky.
Mm-hmm.
But the superintendent is our chief academic officer. She is our chief executive officer. So we do that piece, she has to put it into regulations. So there's often teams of people that have to do things. So sometimes people get a little confused about you know whose job it is. The board doesn't do that piece. We do the policy piece and then the regulations get set out by the
I hope I'm not the only one who listens to this or, you know, is having this conversation and going, oh, my gosh, that makes so much sense. Like, I just don't know. I don't know how many. I know a lot of people obviously are very informed. I would not be one of those people.
But people have various levels of informed, too.
Yes.
So another one that I think is a challenge is school boards don't tax. So when people want to know why we don't pay something better or why don't you just or we don't tax. So if we only have $100, we can only spend $100.
So tell me what that means. Like, where does your budget come from?
Our budget comes from the state gives us some. We get a little tiny bit from the federal, and then the rest is locally funded.
And so, is it funded here off of real estate personal property taxes?
Yeah. So we get 57% about 57% of the local take. And then I'm going to just be rough about this. It's about half our budget, a little less than the state is about half our budget. And then the federal is often that comes in the form of it's a couple different things, but like special education. And that's a piece of contention there, too, because we're federally mandated to meet the needs of our special education students. That's all fine, but they don't fund it. they fund like a tiny sliver.
So
feel like me saying, can you go out to the grocery store and get me something? Here's $5.
Yeah,
and,
but I want filet mignon.
Yes, exactly. So that's another thing. We call them unfunded mandates or underfunded mandates.
Yeah.
We kind of made that up just now.
Okay.
So you were there for it. So that's one of the other problems is that you can only do so much with the budget we have. Now in Prince William County, we have a revenue share agreement with the Board of County Supervisors. So that makes it, in one sense, it's easy to know we have at least this amount. And this Board of County Supervisors has been very good about granting requests that mostly been sitting in the emergency category, you know, when we needed computers, one-to-one computers for the pandemic.
Yeah.
things like that they've been really good about. So this board has been fantastic for Prince William County Schools.
That's great.
Yeah, it's but it doesn't mean that we don't continue to go to Richmond and advocate for the things that we need. Mm-hmm. So one of the things that's coming, I keep hitting this. I hope that's not doing anything. We keep in. You can erase that part. We go to Richmond to advocate for things that are going to benefit our local school system. Mm-hmm. Sometimes those things are exactly the same. Doesn't matter if you're Fairfax or. Mm-hmm. Louisa County or whatever. Yeah. So things like lifting the cap. So what happened during the recession was the state kind of capped the amount of money that they were going to give for certain kinds of positions. And most school divisions are like, but we need you to lift the cap because it costs more to do this mm-hmm. now. So there's things that school boards across the state all advocate for. There might be a little bit of fluctuation between, some places and others.
Different jurisdictions.
But we also meet as representatives across the state. I happen to be the representative for District 10 or mm-hmm. CD10. So we met in D.C. to do some federal asks, but we were also, when we met as that group, it was just really nice to sit and listen to how do you solve this problem or how do mm-hmm. you... What does this look like in your county? Yeah. So, because not everything looks exactly the same. Right. We've had, like here, everybody's dealing with attendance issues. Like here, we are looking at mental health. Like mm-hmm. here, we are worrying about where our workforce is coming from. Mm-hmm. So, it's not unique to Prince William County. It's across the state right. and the nation. So
what are some of the biggest? Biggest challenges that we're facing as a school system here in Prince William County?
Oh, boy. So I would say, like, the brag that we have had locally where people are like, we really know how to pinch a penny here. We get a lot of bang for our buck has come to bite us in the behind because mm-hmm. in the pandemic, we did not have central office support mm. that could easily send out modules that were, ready to go for all of our teachers. We had teachers doing that. It was a lot of work.
Well, I know a lot of teachers personally and just seeing
they're tired.
What they were going through.
Yeah, they're tired.
Unbelievable. Yeah.
Very tired.
Just it felt like they were each doing three jobs.
Yes. And especially if any of them had to not only teach online, but in person at the same time.
Oh, my God.
It was a lot. I remember I remember seeing that on one of my Fairfax County secret teacher boards where mm-hmm. we were talking about it. And I was like, wait, what is this? And I remember reading that and then calling our instructional services in Prince William County. And I said, I just read about something and I think it's a really bad idea. And they were like, no, Mrs. Zargarpur, it'll be fine. And I'm like, no, I don't think it will be.
Oh, my gosh.
And fortunately, I don't think we did it as long as people were going to. Maybe have to, but it felt long enough anyway. Mm-hmm. It was.
Well, and I think that's such a unique perspective that you have as a member of the school board here in Prince William County, who's also a teacher
right.
in our neighboring, our neighbor's
right. and,
county.
And stuff that Fairfax does differently than Prince William, sometimes it's better and sometimes it's not. We, in Fairfax, we have a different way of funding things and different expectation for staffing. So our elementary teachers in Fairfax, they'll tell you there's not enough planning because mm-hmm. there's never enough planning, but they get more planning than our Prince William teachers do. Mm. This budget season, I floated an idea. The problem is we can find the money for it, but it's the people. You still have to have the kids occupied in something. So mm-hmm. if you're going to give their classroom teachers more planning time, those kids need to be someplace else.
Yeah.
And we already have them in art and music and PE and library and counseling sessions. And my suggestion was to start either get a math science teacher who supports the teachers in the classroom
mm-hmm.
or they teach a STEM/STEAM class,
mm-hmm.
which would be fantastic because it's going to support our kids. It's the pipeline of teachers. Yeah. We just don't have it. The way Fairfax County uses instructional coaches is a little different than I think we've done in Prince William. There's also the gifted ed in mm-hmm. Fairfax is a lot different. I have out of my three kids, which I'm pretty sure all three of them were technically gifted, but one was not identified. Two of my kids, did Signet. And I think Prince William can do better because, how do I put this? what we're doing in Fairfax County is just the kids are inside a gifted classroom all day long.
Okay,
so all of their content's gifted all of the time.
Mm-hmm.
It's a higher expectation, but when I'm looking at how it's different than Prince William, where it was sort of a push in, mm-hmm. like now, so here's how you make incremental steps, right? So mm-hmm. this school board values how we can get gifted education into our schools, but we didn't have enough gifted ed teachers. So we made sure the budget included one at every single elementary school rather than sharing them across schools. Now my ask would be what can we do to embed some of the gifted curriculum into the gen ed curriculum? So we're catching more kids because that habits of mind and skill set that they need.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know that it only belongs to the gifted.
Mm-hmm.
I think you can share that out a little bit.
No,
and that was another thing I wanted to, you had talked a little bit earlier about your daughter. You didn't know, I could do this all night.
No, that's fine. My phone's blowing up. I'm like, go away.
Like, you're live.
No.
you talked about how you didn't know what was available to your daughter.
Right. But that some of the classes she was in could have been dual enrollment.
Correct. So that's another thing that we need to do better. We need to make sure all of our families know what opportunities mm-hmm. are available.
She basically got a semester of college for free.
Yeah. And imagine, you know, there's families that don't even know this is a thing.
Yeah.
So that's another piece. When people talk about equity, sometimes equity isn't always this thing that needs to be contentious. Equity is also saying, hey, this school has like 20 AP classes and this school has 40. We need more over here mm-hmm. at the school with 20 rather than, you know, it's about identifying what are these kids asking for? What do they need? And do we ever ask the kids?
And that's, so we've talked about that a lot on this podcast, the difference between equality and equity.
Mm-hmm.
And how basically equality is giving everybody the same thing as opposed to equity giving each person what they individually need to have that sort of level playing field or whatever the phrase is, right? Or get them to have, you know, this one might need a little bit more based on their unique circumstances.
Right.
It's not just, you know, sort of peanut buttering something across the whole student population.
Peanut buttering. I've never heard that.
Awesome.
Oh, that's awesome.
But that's it's a thing. And I don't think people understand all the time that it's, you really do have to take it on the individual level.
Well, and the other thing, too, you and I went to Osborne Park.
Mm-hmm.
It's not an old school. We're not going to say that. You know, it's not old. Yeah. We're not old.
There are older schools.
There's a few. But that school, its physical capacity is only so big. And when we build a new school, it is often the parents who have kids in the OPs and the Woodbridges and the Garfields mm-hmm. who are like, you just built beautiful new Colgan or beautiful new Gainesville. What about our school?
Mm-hmm.
And it's very hard to kind of redo some things. Mm-hmm. So that turns out to be an interesting equity issue because my OP parents have been concerned about the amount of kids who come to the school who are not in the boundaries, right? They're coming for the specialty programs.
Oh, right.
And so the sports have to run in these, like, there's not enough spaces for mm-hmm. all the sports. So some kids aren't leaving school until 11 o'clock at night. Yeah.
No.
Yeah. So that, like, that's an interesting kind of equity mm-hmm. issue. And then you have... we were just talking, Superintendent and I were talking with a teacher last night who was concerned about some of our schools that are very small, that have under 500 kids. You end up with some staff there who are only part-time.
Mm.
And it's hard to hire a person part-time.
Yeah.
No one wants to work part-time as a teacher. Your retirement is not a thing.
Yep.
So that's another issue. How do you make it so that you're building programs and building, you know, mm-hmm. the academics and the basic skills that kids need to be successful across all of our schools, but you have to deal with all kinds of like this school's this size, this school's this old, there's only this much space.
You know? So there's a lot of nuances.
Yes, and thank God we have a superintendent who's willing to tackle this stuff. Yeah. I mean, Dr. Waltz was too, but it's that was a concern, you know, when we were hiring, you know, what is someone going to look at our division and think?
Yeah, right. So. And so Dr. McDade started in, did she start during the pandemic too?
We were coming out of it. Okay. Yeah. So it was like, what, 21? Yeah, she came in July.
Okay.
I think she started in July. Yeah.
So what are some of the things that you guys have been able to accomplish?
Oh, let me, hold on. I have a handy dandy list. Let's see. Oops. Let's see if I can read this. So, so there's things that were, we've worked on this list. So under student success, we've done things to fix the weighting of our grades to kind of keep them competitive with Loudoun and Fairfax. We have to look at like how our kids are going to compete with other kids for those are your university bound students. Yeah. So that's one of the things. We've increased the size of Thomas Jefferson freshman class. So we used to only get about 25 kids from Prince William. Now we have about 80.
Oh, wow. So,
yeah.
So, yep. Fun fact, we were in high school when TJ opened.
I think so.
Because I remember we had, like, friends and it was like, wait, we were going where? And it was...
Right.
I remember the...
You're on the bus for 6 hours, man.
Yeah, exactly. You have to go to Fairfax.
Where is that anyway? I know. We were like, what's that?
Yeah.
So, and that's been... Did you see the court ruling?
No.
Oh, what? Yeah, that came out. Was it today or yesterday?
Oh, no. What was
it? The court affirmed that the way that they're doing the enrollment is not violating anyone's civil rights. So,
okay.
Yeah.
Interesting.
So in Fairfax, I did work in the side of Fairfax that didn't get kids into TJ.
Mm.
Yet, I can tell you now, two of my students that did not get into TJ did get into Yale. So
there you go.
I know.
Interesting.
I'm like, wonder what would have happened if they got into TJ.
Right.
So, we are always celebrating the successes of our kids. We've got more robotics programs. We've got more schools that are sending those teams to national and world championships. Mm-hmm. So that's just exploded.
Yeah.
And I love that there's something for elementary, middle, and high school. We've increased. Oh yeah. Counselor to student ratio, the recommendation is to have like one counselor for every 250 kids. And we weren't there. We're not quite there yet, but we've done better.
Mm-hmm.
But in addition to counseling staff across the division, and we are doing better than we are in Fairfax, because yes,
okay.
That I do know. but we've also hired career counselors in the high schools so they can help with those after high school plans. And it isn't all about college. It's about all the things.
Yeah.
So that's been expanded. We have more instructional coaches than we've had before. We are working through revamping some of our special education. If you recall Adele Jackson of the Brentsville District, she is a special education teacher. So a lot of things, she's got a lot of ideas. And a lot of these things take time.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the low-hanging fruits that we thought would be an immediate help was our first year on the board. We were like, can we just get dedicated TAs into these classrooms? So we expanded, I think, 100 positions and made sure that they were, like, full-time and all that good stuff. So that was one low-hanging fruit.
Mm-hmm.
We need more special education teachers.
Mm-hmm.
We also wanted to see in the middle and high school department heads for special education, which helps take the load off of the teachers. I think we should do that in elementary school. I haven't convinced everybody on that one yet, but you can email your board member on that. Trying to think, we have I love our strategic plan. It's like my favorite thing,
really?
And especially because we reference it all the time.
Yeah.
Every piece of our budget. If you watch our meetings, there's always a section that's how is it tied to our strategic plan? Where does it belong? And how are our students benefiting from it?
So is that something you would recommend parents go read?
Yeah, it's on the website. It's a tome. It's like 40. I think it's 40 pages. I don't know. I've read it so many times, but when we reference it, though, especially when things are tied to the budget, it's tied to that. And I know transparency is a big issue for a lot of people, And I'll say it, what I've learned being on the board is that transparency is, it's whatever it is to you is not to someone else.
Yeah.
Because you're going to demand a certain level of, I want to know. Mm-hmm. And someone else may not care about the same things in the same way.
Right.
But this was a way to show how you are attaching some idea, some piece of funding, and how it's going to get to kids. Mm-hmm. So that's the ultimate goal.
That's great.
Let's see. We had the computer. I'm reading off a list for those who can't see me because it's a podcast.
This is radio, not TV.
I know, right? I'm just like, yeah. I have a radio hairdo on my face.
Yes, good. Same. Or you don't have to wear makeup.
Or shoes or anything. So the other thing that we've done a lot of is boost our safety and security. Mm. We just this spring did a whole, you haven't had to do this because you haven't been a substitute or a teacher, mm-hmm. but there used to be these red folders that would hang in the classrooms, which mm-hmm. would have all the procedures. That is now a poster with an icon. And we're connecting it to this program, the Raptor program, when you have to give your ID,
yep.
there's something that is connected to Raptor that can also do alerts and things like that too. Mm-hmm. So that's going to be part of our security protocols. We just did the Evolve system that will be in all of our middle and high schools. And
what is that?
That is the artificial intelligence weapons detection system. Mm. So that I know a lot of people were very concerned about it. Mm-hmm. We had some community meetings that people could go to see the system in action.
Right. Okay. Yes. So was it the AI aspect?
Yeah.
Because they were concerned it wouldn't get it quite right. Or...
Yeah. So it's looking for shapes of weapons. Mm-hmm. So, and you can change the sensitivity on it.
Mm-hmm.
It's not going to, no system's perfect.
Right.
And I was concerned that I don't really feel like we need teachers like being like, can you unload your backpack and show me that cylindrical thing that showed up on this mm-hmm. AI thing is. So we're going to have our SROs do that. Mm-hmm. That would be better suited for them.
Yeah.
So there's a plan that's in place and it'll be rolled out in the fall.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was a $10 million over 4 years. So
how much... you know, you and I were talking earlier about, like, how much are people concerned about things because they see it on the news in some other jurisdiction right. and are worried that that's going to happen here, which is totally valid. Do you right. get that a lot? And then what is the answer? Like, how safe is it in Prince William County when you look at, you know, either incidents or...
Oh, So safety... Here's the problem, and the audience cannot see me waving my phone around. Mm-hmm. What you see on social media, here's a couple things that happen. So you hear about something that happened. I heard that some kid made a threat and blah, 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 blah. Mm-hmm. So the school community, the people in that community are usually informed about what it is or isn't.
Mm-hmm.
And oftentimes to sort of help make people feel better, we'll send some extra security out. Even if it's not a thing, mm-hmm. even if it's unfounded, just the presence of people.
Mm-hmm.
What's happening, I'm noticing on social media, is that people do the but, or what if, or mm-hmm. but, I don't know, and how do we know? And mm-hmm. so that's been a more recent phenomenon with our social media.
Mm-hmm.
Every threat is taken seriously. If a kid brings a knife to school and someone finds it, I know you just raised your eyebrows, it's investigated. Mm-hmm. Even if it was like, you know, some little kid like who threw something in their backpack and didn't know what it was, whatever. Whether there's intent behind it or not, everything is treated as if there's intent behind it mm-hmm. because you don't want to make a mistake on mm-hmm. that. So when the police need to investigate, they're involved. The principals have a protocol. There's a team at the school that does threat assessment. So we have processes and procedures in place
mm-hmm.
and there's appropriate levels of who to call and when.
Mm-hmm.
So that's already there. Where I think people get concerned is that they see things and they don't know how it was resolved or mm-hmm. people make suppositions based on.
Yeah, because I would imagine there's privacy issues.
Yeah.
Certainly the families of the students in the school deserve to know that their kids are safe, but that may not equate to, I'm going to give you every bloody detail about what happened.
Correct. And even if a student did make a threat, maybe it was founded, maybe it wasn't, you still don't get to know about, you know, we don't divulge student information.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, and even board members, like, people make assumptions that we have a more omnipotent sort of view of things, but we're only told, we're not told like little, you know,
like all the little details.
Yeah. And, yeah. We're not operational. So we don't need to know unless it rises to a certain level. And of course, when constituents reach out, if I say, hey, I've been hearing something, what's going on, I'm going to hear about it. But, we don't get like, every like somebody elbowed somebody in the hallway and it turned into a fight. We don't get all of that.
No.
So I think we can safely say that the schools are handling things as they come up.
Mm-hmm.
And nothing is treated as not serious.
Right.
I don't like double negatives like that.
But no, I got it. And I think the fact of the matter is that, you know, as far as I can recall, again, having been here my whole life, you know, we haven't had a huge, horrible, tragic event.
Right.
There were a couple things that happened when you and I were in school.
Oh.
But not like you see, you know, these school shootings and stuff, but I'm sure every jurisdiction thinks it would never happen here. So it's a valid concern.
Right. And you know, the other thing, oh, goodness, I'm stepping on your cords here. Another thing that people worry about is, you know, like there's a lot of what ifs.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of parents don't want their kids to not have a cell phone.
Mm-hmm.
They want to be able to get in touch with their kid. And we have to be, think about like what happens in a lockdown situation. I'm a teacher. I have to make my room very, very quiet. We practice that part. You know, there's decisions that the adult in the room has to make. I can't have my kids texting in the middle of a, that's not. I get it because I'm a mom. Mm-hmm. I don't want to, you know, be worried about my kid. But we also need to trust the process a little bit because we practice it.
Yeah.
And not all lockdowns are because of a threat. Sometimes it's like in the, you know, in the area.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
I don't want to minimize that, but I think everybody's constant because we can know things.
Yes. I think that is a huge piece of it, that there's this instant gratification that's been like built into the psyche of our whole society where it's like, if, you know, my dad used to joke, this wasn't even about access to information, but like, the advent of the microwave. And he's like, only in America, which wasn't true, but you like microwave a hot dog for 30 seconds and you're sitting there like tapping your fingers. Yeah. Like, when is it done? And so I feel like that's where we are as a society, where you do have, you know, all the information you could ever want and not want in your hand.
Yeah.
And so we get used to this instant access.
Right. And we have had things that have happened, which is why we're constantly looking at our security positions and our procedures. And whenever there is something that happens at a school anywhere in this country, especially if there was an error made, we learn from those errors.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the things that we did most recently was make sure that our fire and police know every layout of every building and that there's going to be no question about if they need to be in that building, they know how to get in the building.
Yeah.
So all of these, they're called Knox boxes. They're going to be on outside of our schools that the police and fire can get into. So they don't have to worry about waiting for somebody to show up with a key or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
We already have people who patrol our schools and do certain kind of safety checks.
Mm-hmm.
We already have the cameras and upgraded systems.
Mm-hmm.
We have increased the presence of security people in our buildings.
Mm-hmm.
Our SROs are supplied by the county. So
school resource officer?
School resource officer.
And what is that? Is that a police?
It's a police officer.
It's a police officer.
Yeah, they are trained by the police police department. We have a very good relationship with the police department. Dr. Mm-hmm. McDade and our police chief meet regularly mm-hmm. to go over whatever they need to talk about. Mm-hmm. The police chief does not just put any person in.
Yeah.
You have to be special vetted and mm-hmm. trained and everything. Yeah. And I think the first thing he tells the officers is build relationships with the kids. Mm-hmm. That's the number one thing. So our SROs are the problem is our police department doesn't have enough officers. Yeah. It's got the same issue as the teachers and the bus drivers and mm-hmm. the whatever else.
Yeah.
There's not enough people doing these jobs. And so we don't have an SRO dedicated to every single middle school.
Mm-hmm.
So we share them across our schools sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
And hopefully that'll change. That'll improve. Yeah. I know our Board of County Supervisors has done better with the pay for police. So that might draw in some more people mm-hmm. who would be interested in these positions. But you can't, I don't even think you can sign up to be an SRO. You have to have done like a couple years doing other things first.
Yeah.
So
it's not like I'm going to come do reading hour.
Yeah. Now, I have constituents who want to see SROs in our elementary schools. We're nowhere close to that anyway.
Mm-hmm.
But that's,
so they're in all the high schools and most of the middle schools?
Yeah, okay. Yeah, there's some spaces where they're shared. That changes from time to time, mm-hmm. so I can't remember off the top of my head.
Okay.
But and they're vital to the to safety and security. Yeah. So
interesting.
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
Okay, cool. You were asking about, so I didn't finish there. Let's see.
You have a long list.
Oh, we were, yeah, no, it's pages. We reformed our Title IX office. So some of these things that people will talk about that happened in Loudoun County, they're Title IX issues. You actually have to have an office that can investigate. So
what is Title IX?
Title IX, that's that. A lot of things fall into it. That's you can have, it can be, do girls and women have equal access to field time?
Okay. Gotcha.
It could be in sports. It could be assaults.
Okay.
It could be a lot of different things. So it's kind of a big umbrella.
Okay.
But most people know it as what happened in Loudoun.
Mm-hmm.
And so you need an office that can field the things that come through. So that's one of the things, you know, I remember this when we were kids. Oh, the central offices are too big. There's too many people working there. Well, we have a lot of departments that need to function as their own department. We can't have someone wearing two or three different
mm-hmm.
hats.
Yeah.
So we've got more qualified investigators and legal counsel in Title IX. And you want legal counsel to make sure you're in compliance with state and federal laws
mm-hmm.
for all kinds of things, not just Title IX, but special ed and everything else.
Yeah.
Let's see. I love this. Yeah, we've actually. Oh, so you haven't been over at OP, have you? We got windows.
How did you manage that? What'd they do? Bust out the cinder blocks?
Yeah.
Wow.
They did. So it's no longer safe in a nuclear war, but they have sunlight, so it's great.
There you go.
I know. Remember that?
Yes. It was very prison-like.
So they have windows, and they have walls.
Wow.
They have walls, oh my gosh. And Osborne Park is going to be getting a new turf field, and I think they're going to try to do something with the track.
Mm-hmm.
I think they're getting a new concession stand, too, or some upgrades or something.
Yeah.
So there's definitely, I think it's the same concession stand when you and I were there. So
Probably.
Wow. So, so there's definitely some upgrades there. Parkside's being renovated right now. Hilton's being renovated. I think Bennett had some renovations. I'm going through the Coles mm-hmm. district ones.
Yeah.
Signal Hill had a little bit of renovation.
Mm-hmm.
We're opening a new elementary school in Manassas. That affected some attendance boundaries
mm-hmm.
Lines through Manassas schools. But that school will be opening in August.
Where is that going?
It's not far from the Costco.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
Yeah. So, a lot of stuff going on.
My gosh, when we were in high school, I think there were five. It was like Stonewall, OP, Woodbridge, Garfield.
And Potomac.
And Potomac.
Yeah.
So not
count- Oh, Brentsville was there too.
Okay, so we had six. Cal Pie High.
Yeah.
And then Osborne, the archenemy in the city of Manassas.
Right.
Now there's Osborne and 13
yep.
high schools with Gainesville.
Yep. And we're looking at a potential high school out in the Woodbridge area too.
Mm-hmm.
So it's yeah, it's crazy to think about how big this county has gotten.
Even when I was in law school and I graduated in 2000, I got so much grief from my classmates for saying I lived in Manassas because it was, you know, they're all like inside the Beltway.
Yeah.
And I would, it was like, oh my gosh, do you have electricity?
Yeah.
I'm like, it's not that far away. But, you know, there are some, there's just so much great stuff out here. And I feel like it really has come a long way.
It
right?
has.
Since we were in school and... it is continuing to grow, and
we are the most diverse county in the state of Virginia,
mm-hmm.
and the 10th most diverse in the country.
Yep. We talk about that a lot, which is why I get so worked up about the demographics within the county and across the 7 magisterial districts and how it can be very unbalanced.
Yeah, it's also striking. I looked up the census data the other day for something, just how many people have degrees,
mm-hmm.
how many people speak more than one language. It's just grown so much.
Yeah, it really has. And we were the only majority-minority county in Virginia until 2021. And now Fairfax is as well. But their percentage, on a percentage basis, even though they're 2.5 times our size in population, they're the second most diverse. Well, yeah, the only... Prince William and Fairfax are the two majority-minority counties in Virginia. And yes, Prince William is still, last I checked, the 10th largest in the nation.
Yeah. And the other thing that I think is really, I mean, look at what's happening. I am part of the Darrell Noor community. So our mosque is big mm-hmm. and we have to expand.
Mm-hmm.
Right. I remember when I started going, how long was it? Well, I met my husband when I was almost 19. So it's been a few years.
Yeah.
but it went from this little tiny, a few hundred people, and now it's just thousands and thousands. Our Sikh community is expanding. They're getting a new temple, mm-hmm. and there's more people moving to this area from Loudoun and from Fairfax because it's
more diverse.
I think it's
specific communities.
Both. So it's more affordable. But there's also communities here that they can relate to and participate in their things. So it's just amazing how much this county has changed. I was just thinking about back in high school, what we looked like.
Yeah. Oh, very much.
Yeah.
Very much.
Yeah.
Okay, so we're kind of at time, but I still want you to take like 5 minutes. And since you brought up the mosque, like I've learned so much in the last couple of years since the pandemic and the Afghan crisis and with all the refugees and everything, like how much you guys are doing in the community. And there was like some hullabaloo about something. Were you guys building something?
We were expanding the mosque.
Okay,
That property is on Hoadley Road. Mm-hmm. And it's next to the horse farm.
Okay.
Yeah, the one that's been there forever and ever.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and there's room on the property to expand. But Friday prayers.
What? Keep going.
Okay.
So as long as you're going to cut this part, if we keep talking, we'll just split it into two episodes.
Oh, dang.
That's what we do.
Oh.
That happens a lot.
Oh, there you go.
So
Friday prayers mm-hmm. are in the middle of the day. And it impacts traffic.
Mm.
We have police that come out there to help direct traffic.
Yep.
On Eid, which is we have two of them, mm-hmm. big holidays. We put signs out early. So people are like, there's an event.
Yeah.
Traffic will be messed up here.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to be getting a traffic light to kind of facilitate some things there. But it's concerning because it's a lot of people. And it was a formerly kind of rural area.
Right.
It's not so rural now. Once you put four lanes on Hoadley Road and straightened it out,
yeah,
this is what you're going to get.
But that's what Sunday looks like all over the county.
Right.
So,
correct.
Yeah.
And the thing about our mosque is that the people who are sitting on the board, and by the way, the person who's our president is a woman.
Oh.
Yeah, Sister Khadija. So, yeah. Yeah. So, We have people from all over the world. It's not like a Saudi mosque or a Pakistani mosque. It's everyone's mosque. Mm. And we have just thousands and thousands of families in this community. And they have all the hopes and dreams they have for their kids and their families. It's as varied as they are. So so our schools see this, our community sees this. So it's definitely a growing area. And then I talked about the Sikh temple that they're expanding. And I just went to one of their events a couple weeks ago, and just tons and tons of people.
Mm-hmm.
Just it's so amazing how many people are participating in our communities.
Mm-hmm.
And they're doing all kinds of great things. They're feeding homeless and they're trying to.
Well, that's what I was going to say. It's not a self-serving community where you guys are just taking care of yourselves.
Yeah.
Sorry, I was recently told to stop saying you guys. It's very gender.
I know.
Restrictive.
It's okay.
I know, but I'm from here. It's hard.
It's I understand.
I'm working on it. Y'all.
Y'all.
That
works.
Right. It's not, you know, and I think a lot of religious organizations do try to do that, and some do it better than others in terms of getting out and serving the community. But I hear about the work that the mosque is doing a lot.
Yeah. Yeah. And well, we've got a really interesting community of people who also participate in voice.
Mm-hmm.
They participate in unity in the community.
Mm-hmm.
We have a lot of people who are civic minded, who make sure that they're advocating for different things in Richmond or Woodbridge, Prince William County, whatever it is.
Yeah.
So it's an active community.
Mm-hmm.
And again, in its diversity, there you'll find like all the things. You'll find the super hard right and the super hard left and everything in between. So it's not without its own struggles and its own versions. But and the other thing that's kind of neat about that community is how fast they'll mobilize around something.
Mm.
So if we need something, they'll work really hard to get it done.
So it's interesting because you said it's not. It's everybody's mosque, right? So when the Afghan refugees came, I know you guys were very active in supporting those people who were here. And your husband played a big role.
Yeah, so, huge role.
Talk about that.
So he, you should probably bring him in.
I'd love to.
He's amazing.
Okay, yes. Well, I got it in, so you need to make that.
Yeah, okay. I'll that would be our date night.
There you go. Awesome.
So my husband, the day that the refugees arrived in Dulles, and they were taken to the
Dulles Expo Center.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It was, I think there were more Afghans who came to help than were actually inside the Expo Center.
Wow.
But it was people understanding that the people who arrived were in shock, that they were probably hungry and tired and didn't know what was going on. And then the government help was just doing following whatever orders they had. That didn't mean that they could speak a language or understood any cultural need.
Here's some water, food, blanket.
Right.
Yeah.
So my husband helped organize that. There were a lot of people involved. He's not the only one, but, and he'll tell you like.
Helped organize the people who came to help.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. He just like, there were people who could do immigration things. There were people who were doctors. There were people who were, you know, worried about making sure that people had halal food.
Mm.
There were people who were making sure that the women felt safe and comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
There were people who were trying to make sure there were diapers and you know, whatever it was that they needed. Over time, because my husband has been active in a not very nonpartisan way politically, he was working with the governor's office. He was working with the State Department. He was working with the Department of Homeland Security. He was working with the Army and the Marines and Quantico to help solve problems and find the right kind of volunteer to do whatever it is that they needed to do. Now, the Catholic services and Lutheran services already do this work, but it was overwhelming because there were just so many people at once. Mm-hmm. And we had a lot of connections to different parts of the community who, like the Mormon Church, they run English classes. So they were ready to roll out English classes for Afghans. Mm-hmm. We had a
whole lot. Did they have people who spoke the native language to help teach the English? Like,
I don't know about that, but I know that the Mormon Church was very active in it because my husband showed me all their materials in the books. It was great.
That's awesome.
I mean, that's like the best part is how much good you saw come out of other people in those moments. I don't really like that a crisis does that, but it's a good reminder in that in those moments and those pieces of very dark and traumatic and sometimes ugly moments where those beautiful things happen.
Yeah, so. Like it just becomes about the humanity of everybody.
Yeah. So my husband was able to leverage some of the relationships with people he knew over at Potomac Mills. There were some empty store spaces. They used those spaces for sort of as a warehouse of just home goods. Mm. And so they were collecting furniture and clothing and anything you can think of. Mm-hmm. Remember when we had the shortage on formula?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they were able to not just help Afghans. There were other people who needed formula. They were able to do that. Yeah. They've helped other people too. When we have Ukrainians in the area, or Russians, depending on who was coming from where, they've helped them as well. So my daughters and my husband have something called One Community Services. So they're working on those volunteer efforts to...
Okay, so the whole family needs to come over. That's basically what I just heard.
There you go. It's the whole family. Yeah, I'm actually... So I'm not involved in that because I've got all this other stuff going on, you know, with school board. And so I kind of feel like I'm very proud of them.
Mm-hmm.
I'm slightly jealous because I'm like, oh, that's... But, you know.
No, you guys...
I got enough to do.
You sound like an amazing family. I mean, you're all so caring and passionate about...
You guys are so caring and passionate.
No, it's a good thing.
No, it's, but you know, so I mean, when I met my husband, I remember being like, oh, he makes me a better person. I kind of wish that for anybody, whoever you wind up with, just hopefully you like compliment each other in the best ways. Yeah. Right. So my husband's got a lot of patience. He's always taking care of others. When we were talking earlier upstairs, when talking about his business before the recession, he used to have so many employees that he helped develop them into managers. They didn't stay with him. They went off and did other things. He didn't care.
Yeah.
Just go live your best life. The relationships he's built, the people that he's worked with over
but
his...
that's the best kind of leader.
Yeah.
You know, the kind of leader that grows
people.
Yeah. And then you know, if you can have a person on your staff that you can literally look at them and say, I might work for you someday.
Right.
You know, that's how it should be. That's what we should be doing for people. That's so great.
It's, you know, just to kind of watch this trajectory of our lives and through our own personal, you know, hills and valleys, because everybody's got them.
Absolutely.
So, So my husband's a... he's a really good guy. When he came to the United States, he wanted to go to college and be an electrician or engineer or something to start with an E. He married the educator, so it's close enough. But he never had the opportunity to go to college. Education is very important to him. He loves school, but it wasn't his time. So, you know, he built the business. He took care of family, and now he takes care of other people. Mm-hmm. So, good guy. My oldest daughter, all my kids are like him in their own way. But my oldest daughter decided to sort of formalize the community service thing a little bit, and organize it so that it can take in donations and sort of have like a board of directors and all that good stuff. So they're working on that. My middle daughter was really involved with the actual like volunteering with people. When she was in college, she learned to speak Farsi. It was Iranian Farsi, but she's a quick study. So Afghan Farsi is similar. Well, I'm sure someone would argue with me on that, but similar enough for her to figure it out.
Right.
So she would kind of act as sort of a translator. Now, Afghans don't just speak Farsi, they speak other languages. So those were foreign to all of us as well. But but my that daughter would go in and work with the kids, and she would work with the moms and volunteer with the youth and just try to help them figure out how to get started up with their studies or what's possible here in the United States. And the hardest part, I think, we talked earlier, was about the housing. That's always, that's tough for everybody.
It is. And I feel like, I don't know, the universe, whatever, is kind of pushing us in a direction where it's like every time I turn around, I get the, you know, great privilege of meeting somebody who cares about housing, maybe for a specific demographic, or, you know, community of people that might be particularly at risk. And I think, you know, you said a little bit ago about how many people come here because, you know, from Loudoun and Fairfax, because they see that there are others that they can relate to and it's affordable. For sure, Prince William County is more affordable than Loudoun and Fairfax, probably more even than it was like when you and I were growing up. You know, we were like the armpit of Northern Virginia. But
that's right.
There's still so many people who can't afford it. I just, a good friend of mine who I've known for years just talked, wrote me about what he's doing for at-risk African-American youth in Fairfax County. And a lot of it, of course, has to do with housing. And it's like if you... You really can't deal with anything else if housing or food insecurity are like the two biggest things you're battling, then you're just trying to stay alive.
Right. Well, that's the, I mean, in education, we talk about Maslow, right? It's your basic human needs have to be met. If you don't feel safe. If you can't rest and fuel your body.
How are you going to how are you going to focus on getting a job or an education or, you know, any of the other things? So it's just so important. And I don't want people to miss the fact that that is still a very real issue. You know, I feel like the term affordable housing has become a bit of a, you know, boogeyman lightning rod because it has a connotation that people put on it. And really, you're talking the people. So many of the people that you're talking about who can't find housing that is affordable are our teachers, our first responders. They can't afford to live where they work. And the people, you know, we were even saying this, especially for this western end of Prince William County, the people who can't afford to live here don't work here. You know, by and large, right? You don't have the big, huge defense contractors or corporate headquarters here. And it's just a very real struggle. And it's not necessarily just people who are facing some, you know, very real crisis who may need housing.
Well, I mean, it's where I work in Fairfax is it's Springfield. And the houses in that area, they're built in the 60s and 70s. And they're going for 800,000, 900,000. It's I can't afford to live where I work either. So
I mean, I have said this a million times. Like, we have two very, very good jobs. And the only reason we're living in this house is because it was a short sale. You know, like, it's like, I don't mean to say it in the way this is going to sound, but it's like, even we couldn't afford to live here. Like, we were in different, you know, we didn't have these jobs then. But, you know, we're not, I'm not working at Target, you know. So it's just a very real thing. And while a lot of people can't afford to live here, there's still plenty of people who work in our communities who we rely on day in and day out, who have to drive in from Fauquier, Culpeper, you know.
West Virginia.
I just hired somebody from West Virginia. She can't afford to live here.
It's, I just,
you know, and she's making $78,000 a year. I mean, that's just crazy.
Well, that just even the other day, because I am in graduate school, it was a great choice. And some of the things that I've had to write, I've had to look up different kinds of information. And when I was trying to make an argument, one of the papers I was writing was talking about kids who don't graduate from high school. And you'd have to kind of follow the whole literature review and thread that I was setting up. But it had to do with when you don't graduate, your job opportunities are much more narrow. Oftentimes, that also means because your job opportunities are narrow, they're not going to pay that well. And you may not have access to really good or adequate health insurance, or you may even not bother with it at all. You may become malnourished or not, but your health could suffer. And there's an associated increase in some people who might commit crimes. It can get to a point where it looks like national security kind of issue, because you've got a section of your people who are not able to take care of themselves, are at risk for a number of things, right? So it's that kind of path, right? And when I was looking at data, I was shocked at how our median income here is over $100,000. Right. Like, what?
Yeah, we've talked about that before, too. Again, I've spent some time looking at those sorts of demographics by magisterial district, magisterial district in Prince William County. And knowing what I know about this particular district where we live, and knowing what it says the median income is for this district, I'm going, there are a very few number of people, not a very few, but some, you know, that makes significantly more than that.
Yeah.
If that is the median.
Right.
And that tells me there's a whole lot of people that make a lot less than that.
Right.
So, you know, when you think about, and maybe it was the average, it might not have been the median. I think it was the average. It was like $75,000. And I'm just thinking, no way.
Yeah.
There's no way people are making $75,000 and living here on that income.
Right. Right.
There's probably at least two of those per household, because you don't have huge neighborhoods of apartments where people can get roommates. You know what I mean? It's these single family homes, and you've got this whole swath that's one home per 10 acres.
Right. And we've had legislators who wanted to create the kind of housing where you could have the, do they call them duplex, where it's split in half? So you have like one side of the house and the other, it's...
I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, we don't have those here.
No.
We don't.
They might ruin the aesthetic.
Yeah.
You can't see my eyes rolling like a slot machine.
Yeah. It's, well, and I worry about getting older. I mean, I'm looking at my parents. My mom still lives in the house that I grew up in. And it's too much house for her. And, you know, I look at my house that I've raised my kids in, and I'm like, I don't need this much house. I don't want this yard. I don't. But when I look at things that are smaller or more for, like, because I'm not in a retirement community yet. I'm still a little young for that, but getting there. And
we had a few years to go.
Yeah, but you look at the price of these homes; they're like $300,000. I'm like, what?
Yeah.
What?
Well, there's nothing for $300,000 over here.
I think they're condos.
Yeah, that type maybe of thing. A condo.
Yeah, I'm just terrified. So I have a choice now. I can either stay fit and be able to get up and down my stairs and hope that when I do die, it's just the piano falling on me and squashing me like a bug and it's over. Or somehow I win.
As long as you don't see it coming. That seems like it would be like the longest 2 seconds of your life.
Fitting way for a music teacher to go.
Right, exactly.
I was inspired by Bugs Bunny, though, so it would be totally in line.
Well, let's definitely get the whole family over here.
Yeah, we should.
That would be so fantastic.
Yeah, they're amazing people.
Yeah.
I look up to them.
Yes. Well, and I told you I'm following your daughter on LinkedIn.
Yeah.
So I was like, it has to be a relation. I didn't really look super closely at her picture. I assumed it was like your husband's sister or something.
Well, so my children don't look like me. They look like him.
Yeah.
So...
Yes.
Yes. I was often...
Did she just cut her hair short? Was it long before? Has she ever had long hair?
She does have long hair, but she didn't cut it short.
Oh, maybe it's pulled back in that picture.
Could be.
Okay. Okay.
I'm not sure if I've seen the picture. Okay. Yeah, my kids don't look like me. A lot of times at school, it was like, you're who?
Yeah.
Wait, who's mom? Are you the nanny? You're the nanny.
My sister gets that a lot. Her husband's Hispanic. And
yeah.
Yeah. Just these bronze beauties.
Yeah. Yeah. So our family is very interesting. My husband's side they are Afghan, but we have Moroccan, Turkish.
Mm-hmm. Awesome.
Got all kinds of different people. My daughter, my oldest daughter, married a guy whose family's from El Salvador. So, yeah.
So fun.
It's that 1-year-old baby party was so fun.
Oh, yeah. I bet.
That all was, the different music and food. It was
I
great.
Was going to say that was probably like a... at 1 year old, even, you know, we can throw parties that are really more for the parents.
Oh, yeah, it was totally for the parents. Yeah. But like, they didn't get to have a wedding because it was during the pandemic. Yes. And so it's sort of like everybody was, I don't want to say owed this, but.
Yeah.
But it was, it's fun. Her sister-in-law has an event center, so there's that.
Awesome.
Yeah. So it makes it easy. But it's just. I love our county and how beautiful it is. Mm-hmm. And, there are challenges in the growth. Yeah. It's not without its problems. We hired a fantastic superintendent to help us mm-hmm. with that. I have a bazillion percent faith in her that she will do a great job.
Yeah.
So, and we're working really hard on making sure we're, working on getting better pay for our employees. Aligning it to be closer to what Loudoun and Fairfax pay.
Mm-hmm.
As a Fairfax employee, I've seen that gap kind of go narrow and then widen, and it does a lot of this. Now, one of the things that keeps me in Fairfax is that we have a separate pension, and they just started talking about maybe getting rid of it. And I'm just sitting there going, whoa, this is valuable.
Mm.
What? So, it's just a whole thing. So.
Always something to address.
It is, because I'm not a stock market wizard or anything yet.
No.
So.
Well, thank you for joining us. This was awesome. Very fun.
I will invite
the
family.
You'll be back with the family.
Yes.
Great. Thanks for listening, everybody, and we'll talk to you soon. My discussion with school board member Lisa Zargapur was so informative to me as a mother of children educated in Prince William County, and even as someone who was educated locally. I love that her entire family is engaged with broader concerns in the community as well. We look forward to having Lisa back with her family to talk about their activism in Prince William County. Talk to you soon. A Different Truth podcast is hosted by Nikki Bland and recorded at Double Door Studios. Produced and engineered by Kenny Bland. Original music by Kenny Bland and Josh Scalero.